Frank's plan worked. He kept an eye on his back trail all afternoon, and he was confident that no one had followed him from Buckskin. He followed roundabout routes, rode across rocky stretches and along streams just to make sure he threw off any pursuers. He didn't see any sign of being trailed. By mid-afternoon the next day, Frank had reached Carson City. He didn't bother stopping at a hotel, but instead rode straight to the state capitol, an impressive two-story building of light-colored brick topped by a white bell tower with a flagpole on its summit. Trees dotted the green lawn in front of the capitol building.
Now stay with Stormy, Wolf.
Frank tied Stormy at one of the hitch racks. The big cur sat down, and Frank knew he wouldn't move. Passersby on the street cast nervous looks at the shaggy, wolf-like creature, but Wolf ignored them and maintained his dignity. A directory in the lobby of the Capitol building sent Frank to the second floor in search of the governor's office. He knew the odds were against him being able to just waltz in and see the man right away, but he didn't see any harm in trying. Sure enough, a pasty-faced gent with spectacles stopped him in the outer office.
Good afternoon. I'd like to speak to the governor, please.
I'm sorry, sir. You'll have to schedule an appointment, and I'm afraid that Governor Sadler won't be able to see you for at least 2 weeks. He's a very busy man, you know.
Frank supposed that was true. Reinhold Sadler hadn't been governor for long. Elected as lieutenant governor on the Silver Party ticket, he had assumed the top office following the death of Governor John E. Jones, who was also a member of the Silver Party. Since the main thrust of the party's platform was to free silver mining and the silver trade from excessive federal regulation, close ties existed between Silver Party politicians and the mine owners in the state. Frank was aware of all that, even though business and politics had never been consuming interests of his. He played that card.
Maybe you should ask the governor if he could make room in his schedule to talk to me for a few minutes. My name is Frank Morgan. I'm one of the owners of the Browning Mining Syndicate.
Ah, Mr. Morgan. If you have some means of identification?
My word's usually good enough.
I suppose I could let the governor know that you're here and would like to speak with him. Do you have a calling card? No, I suppose not.
You might mention to the governor that Conrad Browning is my son, too.
I'll be right back, Mr. Morgan.
Then the secretary disappeared through a door into Sadler's private office. He wasn't gone for very long, maybe a minute. When he reappeared, he had a smile on his face.
Governor Sadler said for me to send you right in, Mr. Morgan. I'm sorry for any misunderstanding.
No need for you to be sorry, son. You're just doing your job.
Frank went into the office and found Governor Sadler standing at one of the windows that looked out over the lawn and the bustling streets of the capital, as well as the snow-capped Sierras that provided a picturesque backdrop to Carson City. The politician was a beefy man with thick dark hair and a graying Van Dyke beard. Sadler turned away from the window and came toward Frank with his hand extended. Frank shook hands with the politician.
Mr. Morgan, it's an honor to meet you, sir. I've heard a great deal about you.
A little of it might even be true.
Cigar? Brandy?
No thanks, Governor. I know you're a busy man, so I'll get right to the point. Despite what I told your secretary out there, I'm not really here as one of the owners of the Browning Mining Syndicate. I'm here as the Marshal of Buckskin.
I heard you taking that job. Wasn't sure why Buckskin even needed a marshal. Then I found out it wasn't a ghost town anymore. There are, three mines producing regularly again?
That's right. The Crown Royal, that's the one my son Conrad and I own. Tip Woodford's Lucky Lizard and the Alhambra, owned by a lady named Monroe.
Yes, I recall hearing about some trouble down there involving the lady's late husband. You were mixed up in that too, I believe.
Only as the local law. And that's my only interest in the trouble that's going on in Buckskin now. We got a court case pending, a challenge to Tip Woodford's rights to the Lucky Lizard Mine, and Judge Grampus was supposed to be hearing it. Today, in fact.
Yeah, I heard what happened to Judge Grampus. It was a terrible, terrible tragedy. He was a fine, dedicated jurist for many years. It's a shame he had to run into those stagecoach robbers.
That was no accident.
What do you imply, Mr. Morgan?
I'm not implying anything, sir. I'm flat out telling you that Judge Grampus was murdered. Those owl hoots who stopped the stage were sent to get rid of him. The so-called robbery was just to make it look like the judge wasn't killed deliberately.
Well, that's a rather startling theory. Do you have any proof it's true?
No, sir, not yet.
Do you have any idea who would want the judge dead?
A man named Dex Bratton. He's the one who's challenging Woodford's ownership of the Lucky Lizard.
Now, I don't understand. If the date for the trial was imminent, why would this man Bratton want anything to happen to Judge Grampus? That would just delay the legal disposition of the case.
Exactly. Bratton has been pushing Woodford to accept a settlement offer. He's been doing that ever since he came to Buckskin, based on a document he claims proves his ownership of the Lucky Lizard, a document nobody except Bratton has ever actually seen.
Oh, you believe that Bratton has no real case, and if the trial actually takes place, that fact will be revealed. In other words, he's just a cheap crook trying to bully his way into someone else's hard work and good fortune.
That's about the size of it.
But again, you have no proof.
Not a bit, so far. All I have to go by is what my instincts tell me.
Well, I am sure the instincts of a man such as yourself are quite reliable, Mr. Morgan, but in the absence of any real evidence, I don't see how I can help you. This is not really a matter for the governor's office anyway.
There's one thing you can do. I reckon the truth will come out at the trial. So if you appoint another judge right away to take Judge Grampus's place and sent the fella back to Buckskin with me, we can bring the case to trial in a day or two, rather than the weeks or more that Bratton is probably counting on.
What you say makes sense, Mr. Morgan. If Bratton is truly a fraud, he wouldn't want the case to come to trial. But if he's telling the truth and can prove it, then rushing another judge to Buckskin would only hasten the legal defeat of Mr. Woodford, who, I take it, is a friend of yours?
Yep, Tip and I are friends. I wouldn't ever deny it. But he'll have to take his chances in court, and he knows it. I'll enforce whatever the judge decides, and Tip knows that too. I just want him to get a fair shake and not be buffaloed into giving up something that's rightfully his.
Now, this is quite an interesting situation. My instincts say that you're probably right about Bratton, Marshall. I figure that given your history, you must be a pretty shrewd judge of character. I'll have to appoint a replacement for Judge Grampus, of course. I started thinking about that as soon as I heard what happened to him. I wasn't really planning on doing it right away, though.
The longer you wait, the more it plays into Bratton's hands.
Yes, I suspect you're right. I can't simply snap my fingers, though, and produce an acceptable candidate for the job. I have to sift through the possibilities and consider each one carefully.
Begging your pardon, Governor, but if you can find a fella who knows the law, can get around under his own power, that isn't drunk by 10 o'clock in the morning every day, I reckon he'll do. One of my lawyers is representing Tip Woodford, and I reckon he'll knock down Brighton's case without much trouble.
Confident, are you, sir?
I've never seen a reason to be any other way, sir.
As a matter of fact, I agree with you. Man's got to believe in himself before anybody else will. Yeah, I have a man in mind. I'll see if I can locate him this afternoon. If he's agreeable to taking the job, you'll escort him to Buckskin personally?
We'll start first thing in the morning. Make it there tomorrow evening, if we can. And hold the trial the next day.
You don't believe in wasting any time, do you, Mr. Morgan?
Not when all hell keeps trying to break loose in my town.
The governor saw to it that Frank had a room at the best hotel in town. After arranging for Stormy and Wolf to be taken care of at a nearby livery stable, Frank took advantage of the opportunity to clean up and have a good meal. His impatience grew stronger as the afternoon went on, and he was about to start back to the Capitol building on his own when a messenger arrived from Reinhold Sadler, summoning him to the governor's office. Another man was there with Sadler when Frank strode in. This second individual was shorter than the governor and had a fringe of graying red hair around a mostly bald head. He was clean-shaven and wore a rather belligerent expression on his face. His hands were clasped together behind his back, and he kept them there as he and Sadler turned to face Frank.
There you are, Morgan. Meet Judge Cecil Caldwell.
Morgan. Gunfighter, eh? I've heard of you.
I'm here as the Marshal of Buckskin. We got trouble brewing there, and it's not going to settle down until a trial establishes who really owns the Lucky Lizard Mine. You see, this fella Brighton showed up and claimed...
Please don't say any more. I'll hear argument from the attorneys in the case and testimony from any witnesses they may call. And whatever information comes out in those judicial proceedings will be the sole basis for any decision I render. As a lawman and an officer of the court, Morgan, you should know better than to try to prejudice a case before it comes to trial.
He wouldn't let me tell him anything about the case either, Marshal. Judge Caldwell has a very strict idea of judicial impartiality.
There's nothing strict about it. A judge is either impartial or he isn't. The impartial one doesn't deal in shades of gray.
You're going to be taking Judge Grampus's place, Your Honor?
That's right. Governor Sadler told me you plan to return to Buckskin tomorrow.
First thing, if we don't run into any trouble, we can make the ride in a day, especially if you can travel by horseback rather than in a buggy or something like that.
I'm an excellent rider. I'll be ready to depart at first light.
I know you don't want to hear anything about the case, Judge, but I have to tell you, there's a chance we'll run into some hombres who don't want you to make it to Buckskin alive. The same fellas would be just as happy to see me dead, too.
I appreciate the warning, Morgan, but I'm not going to let the possibility of danger stand in the way of dispensing justice.
Well, then we're in agreement, Your Honor, because I don't plan on doing that either.
Thank you for this opportunity, Governor. I'll do my best to live up to the honor.
I'm sure you will, Judge.
No offense, Governor, but that hombre's about as cold-blooded as a snake.
You said you wanted somebody who knew the law and wasn't drunk by 10 o'clock in the morning, Marshal. Cecil Caldwell qualifies on both of those counts. I don't think I've ever seen the man take a drink, and his record as a county judge is exemplary. He would have been appointed to the state circuit court before now, except for one thing. He is one of the most thoroughly unpleasant individuals you will ever meet.
Yeah, I got that idea. But if he's honest and doesn't mind taking a chance, that's all I care about right now, I reckon.
You really think there's a chance Bryden's men will try to kill both of you to keep you from reaching Buckskin?
Governor, I reckon you can count on it.
Luther wasn't quite sure where he was when he woke up. At first he thought he was in his hotel room. But then he recalled the shots shattering the window and the flames leaping and dancing around him. The attempt on his life came back to him with crystal clarity, shocking him so much that he tried to sit up without thinking about it. The pain in his side and the bandages wrapped tightly around his midsection stopped him. His head fell back against the pillow.
Ah, you're awake. How are you feeling this morning, Mr. Turnbuckle?
What happened? Where am I?
In one of the rooms in my house. I thought it'd be a good idea to keep you here overnight, at least, because of the amount of blood you lost when you were stabbed. Which brings us to your other question. You were attacked last night, Mr. Turnbuckle. Someone shot at you in your hotel room and wound up setting the place on fire when one of the bullets broke a lamp. Then, and this is only a theory, but I think it's a reasonable one, while you and all the other guests were trying to get out of the hotel, an assassin came up behind you and tried to stick a knife in your back. And luckily for you, he missed, at least to a certain extent, and succeeded only in inflicting a nasty cut on your side. It's now the next morning, and you're up to date.
I had some papers.
You need to take it easy, Mr. Turnbuckle. Lie back there. Are you talking about the papers that were stuffed in your sling when Mr. Woodford and Deputy Noonan brought you here?
Do you have them?
They're right here.
Garland stepped over to a chest of drawers and patted a stack of documents lying on top of it.
Some of them were a little burned around the edges, but they don't appear to be harmed otherwise.
Did you read them?
No. I could tell they were some sort of legal business and none of my affair. But even if I had, you could count on my discretion, Mr. Turnbuckle. Doctors are privy to all sorts of secrets, and it's part of our oath to keep them confidential. Do you feel like eating something?
Now that you mention it, Doctor, I am rather hungry. Would it be all right for me to eat?
Of course. You need to keep your strength up. I'll bring you some food and some hot coffee. In the meantime, Catamount Jack wanted to know when you woke up. So I'll see if I can find a boy to run down to the marshal's office and tell him.
Marshal Morgan's not back from Carson City yet. No, of course he wouldn't be. There hasn't been enough time for that.
No, I wouldn't think so. I'll be right back with some breakfast for you.
A few minutes later, the doctor returned with a tray containing a couple of biscuits, a bowl of soup, and a cup of coffee. He helped Luther sit up in bed with several pillows propped behind him, and then placed the tray on his lap.
Can you manage? My nurse isn't here today, and I have to get ready to see some other patients.
I'm sure I'll be fine.
Luther was able to use his wounded arm enough to balance the tray with it, and he could feed himself with his other hand without any trouble. Garland left the room, closing the door behind him. Luther was almost finished eating when the door opened again. Luther looked up, expecting to see either Dr. Garland or Catamount Jack, but instead he was surprised when Colonel Desmond O'Hara walked into the room.
Good morning, Counselor. I'm glad to see that you don't look too worse for your ordeal last night.
What are you doing here, O'Hara?
Tut, tut, Counselor. Just because we're on opposite sides of a case doesn't mean that we have to be enemies. I heard about what happened and wanted to be sure you were all right. The doctor was busy with other patients and told me it would be all right for me to step back here and see you. Can't an attorney inquire as to the health of opposing counsel without worrying about such things as legal improprieties?
I didn't say anything about legal improprieties. And as for us being enemies, how can we be anything else when you're working for the man responsible for my injuries?
If you made such a comment in public, it would be actionable. Mr. Brighton had nothing to do with what happened to you, and I would advise you not to repeat that statement if you don't want to find yourself facing a lawsuit for libel.
Don't you mean slander?
Yes, yes, of course. The sheer audacity of it confused me for a moment. Slander, libel, whatever you want to call it, the idea that my client had anything to do with what happened to you is a damnable lie.
We'll see. We'll just see about that.
Speaking of damnable lies, Counselor, perhaps it's time we discussed the one that you've perpetrated.
I don't know what you're talking about.
I think you do. I'm talking about the lie that you're a real lawyer.
You're mad, Colonel. Of course I'm a real lawyer. Haven't you ever heard of Turnbuckle and Stafford? We're one of the top legal firms in San Francisco.
I don't doubt that for a moment. But you, sir, are not Claudius Turnbuckle.
How did you...
I don't know who you are, but the real Claudius Turnbuckle is considerably older than you. Even allowing for the fact that you might not be as young as you appear to be, it's simply not possible for you to have been trying cases for as long as Turnbuckle has. I sent a wire from Carson City when I arrived there, prior to coming to Buckskin, asking an acquaintance of mine in San Francisco to find out as much as he could about the man who would be opposing me in court. The answer arrived on the stagecoach a couple of days ago, and I've been keeping it to myself for the time being while I pondered what to do about it.
I am Claudius Turnbuckle. Claudius Turnbuckle Jr. I set out to prove to my father that I am just as good a lawyer as he is.
That won't wash. Claudius Turnbuckle is an old bachelor. He's never been married.
A man doesn't have to be married to have a son?
Oh, so now you're claiming to be Turnbuckle's Woods colt? That's absurd, and you know it. Who are you really? A confidence man? What do you hope to gain by impersonating Turnbuckle and fooling Woodford and Morgan? Wait a minute. You're not trying to swindle them, are you? You actually want to win the case. And you seem to have some legal training. I've got it. You're either one of Turnbuckle's clerks or a young associate for his firm. I don't know what you're doing here in his place, or why you're trying to make everyone think that you're Claudius Turnbuckle, but that would explain why you know as much about what's going on as you do.
Get out of here. Leave right now, or I'll call the doctor and tell him to send for the authorities.
Oh, I dare say that's the last thing you want to do, Counselor. And I use the term loosely. I have more reason to talk to the authorities than you do. You're perpetrating a fraud. You're the criminal, sir, not me. And that's exactly what I'm going to tell everyone in this town, unless you do as I say.
What is it you want? Do you want me to leave town? I can't. I can't abandon the case.
I'm not asking you to do that. I'm merely asking you to see to it that my client emerges victorious in court.
You mean throw the case?
At the trial, when Mr. Brighton produces the document that proves his claim to the Lucky Lizard, You simply concede that it's authentic.
But then the judge would have no choice but to hand over the mine to him.
Exactly. Justice would be served without any more fuss and bother.
Pip Woodford would be left with nothing.
Less than nothing, actually, since Mr. Brighton plans to ask for a share of the profits Mr. Woodford derived illegally from the mine. I warned you, Counselor. I suppose I'll just have to continue calling you that, since I don't know your real name.
What if I fight? What if I win the case?
Then the verdict will be thrown out immediately when I reveal your impersonation, along with the fact that you have no right to practice law. You'll be ruined in the eyes of all these good people, and I'd say there's a good chance you'll be arrested yourself. Think about it. I'm sure you'll see that there's only one thing you can do. Play along with me, and at least you can leave town without winding up behind bars. You can go back to wherever you came from, and no one here will ever know the truth about you.
I don't have any choice, do I?
No choice at all, young man. No choice at all. But you're doing the right thing. Good day, Counselor. I'll see you in court.
Luther wasn't sure how long he lay there, wallowing in misery, before he saw the grizzled, rangy figure of Catamount Jack coming into the room, battered old hat clasped in one gnarled hand.
Howdy, Mr. Turnbuckle. How you feeling this morning?
Oh, I'm all right, I suppose.
You look a mite stronger. You heard I caught up with the hombre who took them pot shots at you last night?
No. Who was it?
Fella named Mason. He worked as a bartender down at the Top Notch Saloon. That's the saloon where Brighton does most of his drinking, if you get my drift.
Did you arrest the man? Will he testify about who hired him?
He's dead. Some varmint gunned him from an alley before he could say anything about who hired him. But I got me a hunch Brighton had something to do with that, too. You want me to go on, Mr. Turnbuckle? You look like you ain't feeling too good.
When will Marshal Morgan be back with the new judge?
Sometime tomorrow or the next day, I reckon. If they don't run into too much trouble. I bet you're anxious for the trial to get started, ain't you?
I am feeling a little tired, Deputy. I should probably rest.
You go right ahead and do that. Either me or Phil Noonan will be somewhere close around here all the time. So don't you worry none about Brighton. That varmint ain't gonna get another chance to bushwhack you.
Judge Cecil Caldwell was at the livery stable bright and early the next morning, as he had promised. Frank waited until the judge got there and let Caldwell pick out his own saddle mount. Caldwell claimed to be a good rider, and if nothing else, he proved to be a good judge of horseflesh, selecting a sturdy chestnut gelding with plenty of bottom. Caldwell wore a gray tweed suit and a dark gray derby. He carried a pair of saddlebags that he slung over the chestnut's back.
Those saddlebags looking mighty heavy.
Law books, just in case I need to refresh my memory about any of the finer points of the Nevada legal code. Not that I expect such a thing will be necessary. I know it backwards and forwards.
That's good. Sounds like you're prepared.
I've had my eye on a circuit judgeship for quite some time. I would have been appointed to it before now, if not for influential enemies who conspired to retard my progress. It's a shame that Judge Grampus had to die to create an opening that needed to be filled right away.
Yeah, I've heard that he was a good judge.
One of the finest. Good Lord, what's that?
Oh, that's Wolf.
It certainly appears to be a wolf. In fact, I think you should shoot it just to be sure.
I didn't say it was a wolf. Wolf's his name. He and I are old friends. Wolf, Stormy, and me have been trail partners for a long time.
You're saying that's a domesticated canine?
Yep.
Well, keep him away from me. I don't get along well with dogs.
Come on, you shaggy vermin.
Are you talking to me?
Talking to the dog. I don't reckon anybody's ever gonna take you for Shaggy, Your Honor.
Frank walked Stormy out of the barn. Wolf loped out ahead of the two riders as Caldwell followed Frank. They would be on the trail most of the day, Frank reminded himself, and that was if everything went smoothly. He wasn't looking forward to spending hours in the company of Judge Cecil Caldwell. As it turned out, things didn't go too badly. At least, they didn't once Frank gave up on trying to carry on a conversation with the judge. Caldwell grunted curt, non-committal answers to every question Frank asked, so after a while, Frank stopped asking. That was all right. The rugged countryside was pretty, with its forests and creeks and mountains, and anyway, Frank was busy watching for signs of trouble. They stopped on the bank of a creek at midday to boil coffee, fry up some bacon, and heat biscuits while the horses grazed on the lush grass along the stream.
Sorry if this isn't the sort of fare you're accustomed to, Judge.
It's fine. I've never cared all that much about what I eat. Meals are functional, that's all.
Are you from Nevada, Your Honor?
Wisconsin, actually. I came out here to practice law back in the 70s.
What brought you to Nevada instead of staying in Wisconsin?
My father was a judge. He cast a rather large shadow. I thought my own career might flourish better elsewhere. As it turns out, I was correct. But what about you, Morgan? What led you into life as a wandering gunman?
Some folks would say fate. When I came back to Texas after the war, I figured I wouldn't ever do anything except work as a cowboy. But then there was a fracas, and a fella drew on me, and I wasn't going to stand there and let him shoot me. I slapped leather, too. It didn't take long for word to get around that I was pretty fast with a gun. The more people knew about it, the more trouble dogged my heels. I figured it would be best to move on. Didn't want to bring anything bad down on my friends and family.
You couldn't just refuse to fight those men who challenged you?
I tried, but the good Lord didn't put much backup in me. When an hombre pushes me, I tend to push right back at him.
You should have reported them to the law.
No offense, Your Honor, but you weren't there. And even if I'd backed down, in the long run, it wouldn't have done any good. Sooner or later, one of the men who came after me would have shot me anyway. Probably from ambush, and then lied about killing me in a showdown. Too many fellas wanted to be known as the man who killed Frank Morgan. Some of them didn't care how they did it either.
Again, that's a matter for the law. If you're threatened, you let the proper authorities deal with it. Otherwise, we'd have nothing but anarchy out here. Why, every man would have to carry a gun just to protect himself and settle his own disputes. Can you imagine?
Yeah, I can imagine.
After their meal, they mounted up and started along the trail again. Caldwell's claim that he was a good rider was true, as far as Frank could see. The judge sat the saddle well and didn't seem to be any discomfort from the journey. Around mid-afternoon, Frank reined Stormy to a halt and motioned for Caldwell to stop too.
What's wrong? The horses shouldn't need to be rested again this soon.
Frank pointed to a dim, narrow trail that led off in a zigzag path up a nearby slope, twisting through the thick growth of pines.
That's a trail we're going to take.
That's hardly a trail. We've got a stage road right here that runs straight to Buckskin, I believe.
Yeah, that's the main road to Buckskin, all right. But Tex Brighton and his men know that as well as we do. That's why they're liable to be waiting for us somewhere up the road.
There you go again, trying to prejudice Mr. Brighton's case before the trial even begins. I'm going to disregard that statement, Marshal, and proceed along this trail.
You do that, you'll be riding right into a bushwhacker's bullet, Judge. And it won't matter who paid for it. You'll be just as dead either way.
Are you ordering me to come with you, Marshal?
As a matter of fact, Your Honor, I am. The only reason I came to Carson City to fetch a replacement, Judge, was so that I could be sure that you got there alive instead of dead, like Judge Grampus.
You have no legal authority beyond the limits of Buckskin. You're only the town marshal.
That's all I was, until yesterday.
Frank reached into his shirt pocket and pulled out a folded piece of paper.
That was before Governor Sadler appointed me a special deputy, giving me jurisdiction in the entire state.
Let me see that.
Frank handed over the special commission that Sadler had signed the day before. Caldwell unfolded the document and studied it for several minutes, even running a finger over the state seal that had been stamped into the paper.
This appears to be genuine.
That's because it is.
It seems that I have no choice but to follow your orders, Morgan. Lead on.
Frank put the paper away.
Before we go...
He slid a hand into one of his saddlebags and pulled out a spare .45.
Do you know how to handle a gun by any chance, Your Honor?
Put that away! Special deputy for the governor or not, you can't make me carry a gun. I stand for law, not lawlessness. And that's what that gun represents.
Frank looked at Caldwell's determined expression and put the gun back in the saddlebag.
All right, I reckon I can accept that decision. I just hope you don't regret it before we get to Buckskin, Your Honor.
I'm already beginning to regret becoming involved in this entire matter. I think you would prefer it if you could just shoot everyone who's opposed to you and your friends.
Well, it'd sure simplify matters if I could.
Caldwell looked appalled, but he didn't say anything else. just fell in behind as Frank pointed Stormy up the game trail that wandered over a mountain and into an adjoining valley. This was just the start of the roundabout route he had planned to take them into the settlement. He hoped that Brighton wouldn't have gunmen posted on every trail leading into Buckskin, but it wouldn't surprise Frank a bit if that turned out to be true. He had to give the judge credit. Caldwell didn't complain, even though the going got considerably rougher over the next hour or so. By late afternoon, Frank judged they were about 5 miles west of Buckskin. They rode up out of an arroyo and into a relatively flat stretch of land that ran east and west, with the broken land through which they had come to the north and a line of vermilion cliffs jutting up to the south. Frank pointed toward the cliffs.
Those run for miles, and there's no way to get a horse up or down them. A man might be able to make it with ropes, but it'd be a rough climb. Those badlands are volcanic in origin. Except for that arroyo we followed through them. The rocks are so sharp they'll cut a horse's hooves to ribbons in a few hundred yards. Same with the man's boots. But if we follow this open stretch for a few miles, we'll come out pretty close to Buckskin.
Lead the way, Morgan. I'll be right behind you.
Instead, Frank swung down from the saddle.
Let's give the horses a breather. There's not much graze here, but they can rest a spell anyway. So can we.
The men stood in the shade of a scrubby pine and watched as Stormy and the judge's chestnut plucked at the sparse clumps of grass growing from the rocky ground.
You think you'll be able to hold the trial tomorrow morning, Your Honor?
I don't see why not. From what you've told me, both litigants are represented by capable counsel and they've had adequate time to prepare their cases. I'll call the court to order at 9 o'clock tomorrow morning, and if either party requests a delay, they'll have to show cause why such a delay should be granted. Otherwise, we'll proceed with the trial immediately.
Sounds good to me, and I'm sure it will to Tip Woodford, too. He's had this hanging over his head for far too long already.
Shouldn't take long to hear the evidence. I expect the trial won't last more than a day or two.
I hope you're right, Judge.
A frown creased Frank's forehead as he watched Wolf stand stiff-legged, gazing off to the west.
What's got into that animal?
Hit the saddle, Judge. We gotta get out of here.
Blast it, Morgan! What are you...
Caldwell didn't get to finish his indignant question because just then a bullet slapped through the air next to him, followed instantly by the crack of a rifle. The judge stood there, open-mouthed for a heartbeat, as if he couldn't believe that he'd just been shot at. Frank hadn't swung up into the saddle yet. He lunged toward Caldwell, grabbed the man's arm, and practically threw him at the chestnut.
Mount up, Judge, now!
A bullet struck a nearby rock and screamed off in a ricochet. That sound seemed to penetrate Caldwell's brain and convince him that he was in deadly danger because he took hold of the reins and began scrambling up onto his horse's back. Two more shots rang out while he was doing that. Frank pulled his Winchester from the saddle boot while he was mounting up. He hauled Stormy around and looked off toward the west, where four riders were galloping toward him and the judge. The horsemen were about 300 yards away.
They should have gotten closer and then opened up on us. Get moving, Your Honor. As fast as you can, that way.
What are you gonna do, Morgan?
Try and slow those varmints down a little.
Frank jerked his Stetson from his head, leaned over, and slapped the hat against the chestnut's rump.
Go!
Caldwell went. He didn't have any choice because the horse underneath him took off in a lunging gallop. The chestnut was heading in the right direction, though, so all Caldwell had to do was hang on and let the horse do the work. Meanwhile, Frank swung Stormy around and lifted the Winchester to his shoulder, working the lever to jack a cartridge into the chamber as he did so. Stormy was well accustomed to gunfire. The rangy gray stallion didn't budge as Frank cranked off three rounds as fast as he could work the rifle's lever. One of the men was knocked backward out of the saddle as a round fired by the drifter plowed into his chest. Another of Frank's shots found the mark. A man sagged forward, falling off his horse dead. That left two of the ambushers, and since they were still more than a couple of hundred yards away, Frank whirled Stormy around and trusted to the stallion's speed and strength to outdistance them. He heeled Stormy into a run, following Judge Caldwell toward Buckskin. Frank saw the judge about 50 yards ahead of him. The chestnut was still running full tilt. Caldwell grasped the reins with one hand and held his derby on with the other. It didn't take long for Stormy to cut down the gap between Frank and the judge. When Frank glanced over his shoulder, he saw that he had pulled away even more from the pursuers. Caldwell must have heard the pounding beat of Stormy's hooves on the hard ground because he looked back to see who was closing in on him. His face was white with fear. Frank waved him on. They couldn't afford to slow down. Stormy drew even with the judge's horse. Frank gave Caldwell an encouraging nod and pulled back a little on the reins, slowing Stormy so that they wouldn't sweep right on past.
Frank didn't know if the pursuit would continue all the way to Buckskin, and another worry on top of that had occurred to him. The sound of gunshots traveled a long way. If Brighton had other gunmen in the area, they might hear the shooting and start to close in. It was possible that Frank and Caldwell might still be cut off from Buckskin. A few moments later, Frank saw that he had been right to worry about that. Three riders appeared on the right, angling toward them from the direction of those Vermilion Cliffs. The men were riding hard on a course to intercept them, and Frank didn't have any doubts about their identity. They were more of Brighton's killers.
Follow me, Judge!
He veered Stormy to the left, toward the brakes. They couldn't escape by going through those badlands. It would be suicide to try. The horses would be hobbled and unable to go on before they went 100 yards. But maybe they could skirt the edge of that wasteland, Frank told himself. If he and Caldwell could get around the horsebackers coming from the right, it would still be a horse race to the settlement. Frank hauled back on the reins, slowing Stormy. Caldwell and the chestnut shot ahead. Caldwell noticed that Frank was gone and started looking around wildly for him. But by then, Frank had Stormy moving up on the other side of the chestnut.
Over here, Judge. Keep moving. Head straight along the edge of the brakes when you get to it. I'll give you some cover.
From time to time, Frank saw a spurt of dirt and gravel from the ground nearby, an indication that the two men behind them were still shooting. The three closing in from the right had opened up too. Frank still had his Winchester in his right hand, as he used his left to hold the reins. He wasn't trying for accuracy as he thrust the rifle's barrel toward the three bushwhackers on the right and pulled the trigger. He just wanted to come close enough to maybe slow them down a bite. Then he twirled the Winchester like it was a handgun, using the weapon's own weight and motion to cock the loading lever again. He then took the reins in his teeth, shifted the Winchester to his left hand, and used his right to draw the Colt on his hip. He guided Stormy with his knees as he fired both weapons, twirling the Winchester with his left hand while the Colt in his right bucked and roared. One of the men threw up his arms in death and slid from the saddle. Another lost his gun when one of Frank's slugs smashed his elbow. That left only one man coming from this direction, and suddenly it seemed like he wasn't sure if he wanted to catch Frank and Caldwell or not. He peeled away, still shooting, but no longer closing in. Frank threw a glance over his shoulder. He and the judge were still well ahead of their original pursuers. Hope began to rise in him. As always, that was a jinx. Puffs of smoke came from a clump of boulders at the edge of the Badlands as Judge Caldwell galloped past them. The chestnut stumbled. Frank saw the horse slow down.
Damn it!
My word!
The next second, the judge's derby leaped off his head, no doubt plucked from it by a bullet. The chestnut came to a stop, leaving Caldwell an easy target on its back. Frank holstered his Colt and took the Winchester in both hands again. A few rounds remained in it. He brought the rifle to his shoulder and emptied it into the rocks where more of Brighton's gunmen were hidden. He wanted to make things hot for those gunnies by bouncing a lot of hot lead around inside the clump of boulders. They'd be too busy ducking for cover to ventilate the judge. It must have worked, because no more shots came from the rocks as Frank galloped up to Caldwell. He saw that the chestnut was wounded, but ought to still be able to run. Frank jammed the Winchester back in the saddle boot and leaned over to grab the other horse's reins.
Come on! We still got a chance!
With Frank holding the reins in an iron grip, the chestnut broke into a run again, trailing just behind Stormy. Frank leaned forward over the stallion's neck to make himself a smaller target as gunfire resumed from the rocks. He hoped that Caldwell had enough sense to do the same thing. A glance back told him that the judge was following his example. Bullets sang through the air around them, but they were moving fast again now, and none of the slugs found their mark. The men coming up from behind cut into the lead while Frank was slowed down, but they were still well back. The chestnut was moving slower now, however, and Frank was no longer confident that he and Caldwell could outdistance the pursuit to Buckskin. The settlement was only a few miles away now, but that distance might as well be 100 miles, he thought. His rifle was empty too, as was the Colt, and he couldn't pause to reload either. Nor could he manage that task on the run, because if he let go of the chestnut's reins, the injured horse would probably stop again. Frank didn't know how long the animal could go on before it collapsed. He hated to ask for such sacrifice from the horse, but he had no choice. Frank realized he hadn't seen Wolf for a while, and looked around, trying to spot the big girl. At that moment, he heard a faint shriek somewhere behind him and looked back to see that one of the two men who had been giving chase was now on the ground trying to defend himself from a shaggy grayish-brown shape with flashing teeth. Good old Wolf. Frank had to grin as he realized that the cur had hung back and let the bushwhackers go past him, then unhorsed one of them with a well-timed leap. The other man stopped and swung his six-gun toward Wolf in an attempt to save his partner from having his throat ripped out. He was too late on both counts. Wolf sprang aside as the gun roared, leaving a bloody corpse on the ground behind him. Then he took off after Frank and Caldwell, a gray streak moving too fast for the remaining gunman to draw a bead on. Even at a distance, Frank's keen eyes saw enough of that for him to know what was going on. Wolf raced after them. Frank's hope now was that he and Caldwell had successfully run the gauntlet of Brighton's hired killers. More of the gunmen might be in the area, but Buckskin wasn't far away now, and the one man who was left on horseback behind them wasn't giving chase anymore. He had abandoned the pursuit, perhaps realizing that he didn't particularly want to catch up anymore, since that would mean facing the Drifter alone. The chestnut slowed down, and Frank slowed Stormy's pace to match that of the injured horse. They were moving at a fast trot now, slow enough for Frank to talk to the judge.
You can see now why I wanted to give you a gun, Your Honor.
I wouldn't have been able to help, even if I had taken the weapon. I've never fired a gun in my life.
Even some wild shots might have been enough to distract those hombres.
Yes, and I might have shot you by accident, Morgan, or myself.
Well, I hope we're past the worst of it now.
Well, and they're not chasing us anymore.
Nope. We made them pay too high a price for trying to catch us.
You say those men work for Dexter Brighton?
That's my best guess. I don't have any proof of it, of course. But I don't know of anybody else who would want to stop us from getting to Buckskin.
I see. I plan to ask Mr. Brighton about that.
He'll just deny it.
That's his right.
Seems to me you're worrying a mite too much about the rights of a man who wants to kill you.
Somebody has to worry about those rights. Otherwise, sooner or later, no one will have them. That's the rule of law.
Frank shrugged. Caldwell was like a lot of people. He believed that a fella's rights came from a court or a piece of paper instead of his own heart and his own strong right hand. You couldn't argue with folks like that. But sometimes you could show them the error of their ways. Caldwell would see for himself when they got to Buckskin. Vern Robeson was the first to spot them as they rode into the settlement, just as dusk began to ease down out of the mountains. The hostler came out of Amos Hillman's livery barn carrying a pitchfork. He saw Frank and Judge Caldwell, dropped the pitchfork, and turned to run back inside.
Hey, boss! Marshall's back!
Hillman came out of the barn as Frank and Caldwell stopped in front of the big structure. A grin creased the liveryman's weathered face.
Howdy, Frank. Glad to see you made it back from Carson City.
Oh, no gladder than I am to be here, Amos. The judge's horse got nicked by a bullet along the way. I reckon you can tend to it.
Hillman ran a hand along the chestnut's blood-streaked flank.
I see that. Looks like you fellas ran into some gun trouble.
More than our share.
Well, don't worry about this horse. I'll take good care of it. Need a hand getting down, Judge?
No, I'm fine. It's just that I've been holding onto the saddle horn so tightly for so long, I'm having a bit of a problem letting go.
The judge pried his fingers off the saddle horn at last and then climbed down from the chestnut's back. He paused beside the horse and patted its shoulder, taking Frank a little by surprise.
A gallant mount. Do your best for her, sir.
I sure will, Your Honor. I reckon you are the judge Frank went to Carson City to fetch back with him?
He's a judge, all right. Judge Cecil Caldwell. Your Honor, this is Amos Hillman, owner of this livery stable and one of our town councilmen.
If you'd show me the hotel, I'd really like to get a room and rest a bit.
Sure thing.
Frank shucked the Winchester from the saddle boot. He had reloaded it as they approached the town, along with his Colt, and it felt good to know that he had 15 rounds in the rifle, along with the 5 in the revolver. With the rifle held slanted across his chest, Frank accompanied the judge down the street toward the hotel. It seemed unlikely that Brighton would try to kill Caldwell right here in the middle of town, but after all he and the judge had gone through to reach Buckskin, Frank didn't want to lose Caldwell now. Even though night was falling, and the streets of Buckskin weren't as crowded as they were sometimes, enough people were around so that word of Frank's return with the judge spread quickly. Catamount Jack and Phil Noonan came out of the marshal's office and hurried to meet them.
I'm mighty glad to see you, Frank. This must be the judge.
Frank performed the introductions all around.
Everything quiet around here while I was gone?
Not hardly. You know Mason, works down at the Top Notch?
Yeah.
Well, he tried to kill Mr. Turnbuckle. Opened up on him with a Winchester from the roof of Patterson's hardware store while Mr. Turnbuckle was in his hotel room.
Is Turnbuckle all right?
Mason wasn't too good a shot. He missed Mr. Turnbuckle, but hit the lamp instead, set the room on fire, and pretty near burned down the hotel.
Good Lord. You got Mason locked up?
Nope. We planted him in Boot Hill this afternoon. I tracked him from the back of Patterson's store to the Top Notch and had a showdown with him there. At first, he denied trying to bushwhack Mr. Turnbuckle, but then he tried to plug me. I figured that was a good enough confession.
You figured incorrectly, Deputy. Involvement in an altercation doesn't constitute a legal admission of guilt.
Anyway, I let daylight through the skunk, but I didn't kill him. Whoever did that was lurking outside the Top Notch, and he put a bullet in Mason's brain before Mason could say who hired him to kill that lawyer fella. We all know who it was, though. That ain't all, though.
I was afraid you were gonna say that. What else happened?
Well, Mr. Turnbuckle and the other folks staying in the hotel were trying to get away from the fire. Somebody came up behind them and stuck a knife in him.
My God! Is there a murder attempt every 5 minutes in this town?
No, just seems that way sometimes. Go on, Jack. How's Turnbuckle?
Healing up, down at Doc Garland's. Turns out he wasn't hurt too bad, just sliced up a mite. He says he'll be ready for the trial soon as his honor here gets around to it.
Trial will convene at 9 o'clock sharp tomorrow morning. I can't think of any place that obviously needs some law and order more than this godforsaken town.
Come on, Judge, we'll get you settled at the hotel, if there are any rooms left. Jack, I want you and Phil to take turns standing guard outside the judge's room tonight.
I don't think that's really necessary.
After everything that's happened, Your Honor, I'd appreciate it if you'd just humor me. I don't want anything to stop that trial from going on tomorrow.
All right. Is there somewhere I can get something to eat?
Jack, see if Lauren can fix up a tray for the judge and bring it over to the hotel later.
Sure, Frank. What are you gonna do?
I'd like to go have it out with Brighton, but I reckon I'll let the law handle that. I'll go have a talk with Mr. Turnbuckle instead. Let him know that the judge is here and everything's set for tomorrow morning. Judge, if you do what Jack and Phil tell you, you'll be all right. And this whole thing will be over before you know it.
Can't be too soon to suit me.
Frank felt the same way. The showdown was coming, one way or another, and it was damned well about time. Luther Galloway had had an early supper and was propped up in bed, trying to study the notes he had salvaged from his burning hotel room a couple of nights earlier, along with the ones he had made since then. He had written out his opening statement and clutched a pencil in his hand as he revised it, crossing out a word here and there, sometimes substituting another word, sometimes not. Weariness was stealing over him, along with the despair that was his constant companion now, and he was having a hard time keeping his eyes open. He was suddenly wide awake again, though, as the door of the room opened and Marshal Frank Morgan stepped inside.
Marshal Morgan, you're back. Do you have the judge with you?
I sure do. Well, thanks to 7 or 8 of Brighton's gun hawks who tried to stop us.
Are you hurt?
Nope, neither is the judge. Although I reckon he was shaken up a mite by being shot at. He's not used to having bullets fly around his head like you and me, Counselor.
I wouldn't say I'm used to it, and I hope I never am.
I hear you were wounded again, by a knife this time, after somebody took some pot shots at you.
You must have talked to your deputy. Jack caught the man who tried to kill me. One of the men, I should say. We don't know who cut me as I was leaving the hotel.
I'll bet you can hazard a guess, though.
Brian's going to get his comeuppance in court. Who did the governor appoint to replace Judge Grampus?
A fella called Cecil Caldwell. Have you ever heard of him?
No, but it's unlikely that I would have heard of a Nevada judge, since I've always practiced law in California. Oh.
Are you all right, Luther? For a second there, you looked like somebody stepped on your grave.
No, I'm fine. Just weak from losing so much blood, the doctor says, and the shock of being wounded again. From time to time, I have a dizzy spell.
I'd say you've earned it. You'll be ready for the trial tomorrow, though, won't you? Judge Caldwell intends to call the court to order at 9 o'clock sharp.
I'll be ready. Where did you say that court is usually held?
In the Silver Baron. That's the only place in town with a room big enough. Maybe one of these days Buckskin will have a real courthouse.
Colonel O'Hara is likely to object to the trial being held in a building owned by the defendant. He might ask for a change of venue.
I don't think he'll get it. Judge Caldwell is eager to get this over with.
So am I.
I've got Jack and Phil Noonan guarding the judge tonight. I think I'll stay here, as long as it's all right with Dr. Garland, and make sure that Brighton doesn't try one more time to get rid of you.
Do you really think that that's necessary?
I don't know, but I'm not going to take the chance. And after everything's happened, I don't want anything to interfere with that trial. It's time to end this. You go ahead with your work. I'll be right outside if you need me.
Thank you, Frank. You've been a stalwart throughout this entire affair. But tomorrow, when the judge calls the court to order, then it's my turn.
We all know you won't let us down, Claudius.